On today's edition of the Locked On Nets podcast, I will get into the Nets' big win over the Los Angeles Lakers in LA last night, 104-102. Huge performance from Spencer Dinwiddie, clutch shot at the end. Plus, I'll get into part two of ranking the futures of NBA teams with Locked On Knicks host Gavin Shaw. All that and more coming up on Locked On Nets.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Welcome in to another edition of the Locked On Nets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your favorite source for your team every day. I'm your host, Marcus Barahal. Just going to give you, similar to the last podcast, another quick recap on the Nets' impressive 104-102 win over the Lakers in Los Angeles last night. And then later on the podcast, going to be running part two of the crossover that I did with Locked On Knicks host Gavin Shaw, where we rank all 30 NBA teams by their future. We did teams 30 through 16 on the last podcast. Go back and listen to that if you haven't. But spoiler alert, the Brooklyn Nets did not appear. That's right, they are in the top half of these rankings, so that will be coming up later on in this podcast. But first, obviously, have to talk about that huge, huge win over the Lakers, 104-102. The Nets improved to 30-34 on the season, remain a half game up on the Magic for the seventh seed right now in the Eastern Conference standings. This game was really impressive. I mean, the Nets hung with the Lakers. They were down by 11 early on in the first quarter. Early on in the game, late in the first quarter. There were about 2 minutes left in the quarter. They trailed 31-20. And then in the second quarter, they kind of pushed back. Spencer Dinwiddie had a really nice second quarter and led the Nets. They actually tied the game up and then went into halftime down by just two after LeBron James had a really nice steal from Joe Harris, slid down on the floor, wound up leading to a fast break for the Lakers. But regardless, just a nice close to the half from the Brooklyn Nets to come all the way back from down 11 early on and erase that deficit in the second quarter. That turnaround was led mostly by Dinwiddie, like I mentioned. He was extremely aggressive in getting to the basket. He did a really nice job of attacking Anthony Davis when Davis was the lone big in for the Lakers. You know, Davis is one of the best defenders in the league, arguably the best, and he's huge, but he doesn't like to play the center position. It's not his most favorite position, even though it might be a more natural fit, especially in the modern NBA. But there were times where the Lakers had run him out at center in this game, and Dinwiddie, I don't know if he maybe saw something in Davis that sort of opened the door, but with no weak side help, he felt like he was able to drive on him. He had that nice drive along the baseline where he rose up for the dunk and the foul with two hands. Just a really powerful play. And then the other big key to the turnaround for Brooklyn was clamping down on defense. The Nets gave up 33 points in the first quarter, but then after that, 25 in the second, 22 apiece in the third and fourth quarters. And a lot of that defensive effort and intensity was just that. It was intensity. It was aggressiveness. It was Caris LeVert running into the corner for a closeout block on an Alex Caruso three in the second quarter. It was Spencer Dinwiddie jumping passing lanes, showing extremely active hands on defense. It was Chris Chioza boxing guys out down low and like doing the dirty work that Nets fans have come accustomed to from a guy like Joe Harris. You know, it was good to see that kind of rub off on Brooklyn, because in that first 10 minutes, they did look small. They looked undersized pretty much at all five positions. It seemed like the Lakers had a size advantage and could just kind of post up whenever they wanted. So it took a team effort from Brooklyn to crash the glass, to just kind of play more handsy on defense and know that, you know, that was kind of, you didn't really have much to lose. You know, if a guy gets by you, like, it's pretty much the same as him backing you down, so you might as well try to go for that steal. And one game after, in Jacques Vaughn's debut, the Nets were killed in the turnover game and almost blew that Chicago Bulls game because of all their turnovers. In this one, only 10 turnovers in this game, forced 14 from the Lakers, so they actually won the turnover battle, a real stark contrast to that last game. And That's why basically the margin was the same, but this was obviously a much better opponent because the Nets played a lot better, and it was pretty much all effort. Like, they didn't shoot the ball particularly well, 41% from the field, 32% from three, about 74% from the line. Nothing really jumps out at you. They scored 104 points, which, given the way that the offense has clicked at times and how productive it's been, definitely not the best effort of the season. It was definitely the defensive end and then rebounding and gang rebounding. Like, DeAndre Jordan had 12 rebounds, but other than that, other guys chipped in. Wilson Chandler had 5, LeVert had 7 boards, 7 for Jared Allen, 6 for Torian Prince, Dinwiddie had 4. Like, they got contributions up and down the lineup on the rebounding side, and that allowed them to, despite their height difference, to out-rebound the Lakers in this game 47-46, and that was really, like, a key difference in this one. And a lot of those rebounds came on the offensive end. Jordan and Jared Allen both had 4 offensive rebounds, 14 for the Nets as a team compared to 8 for the Lakers. The Nets did a good job boxing out on the defensive end, and then on the offensive end, they crashed the glass, especially when the Lakers just had Davis at center and didn't have JaVale McGee in there as a second big. Dwight Howard didn't play for the Lakers, so they were a little bit more undersized than they would be, but still, they're generally a really big team with LeBron basically as the 3 starting game. So that's a tough matchup size-wise, and the Nets did a really good job to fight against that. I mentioned Dinwiddie's aggressiveness driving. I thought he had a really nice game. It was good to see him play well. He had 23 points in this one. Caris LeVert, another very solid game, 22, 7, 4, 2 steals and a block in this one. And I really feel like he's made a leap ever since that Celtics game this last week and a half stretch. He's been incredible. He's looked like that guy who we've seen flashes of over the years. And who knows, this could turn out to be just another flash long term. It's only been, I believe, like 5 games, so don't want to rush to judgments too quickly, but this is a guy who looks like he has a ton of confidence in his jumper. And then on the defensive end, I think he's played really well. He's been really handsy, jumping in passing lanes, racking up a ton of steals in the last week and a half. So just seeing him do it on both ends, seeing him kind of recognize that, okay, KD's out for the year, we knew that. Kyrie, now it's official, he's out for the year, he's not coming back. Him and Dinwiddie have to be the two guys to lead this team, knowing that they're going to be playing in the playoffs, and they have to step up and act like the number one or number two option on a playoff team, because that's what they're going to be the rest of this season and in the first round. And I think he's making the most of his opportunity to kind of showcase, like, hey, I have this talent, I can be this guy once KD and Kyrie come back, and I can play alongside those guys, I can improve my shooting, I can spot up off the ball, I also have the defensive effort to guard the point guards when Kyrie maybe needs a break on defense. Like, he's showing the exact skills that he would need to fit with those guys. And yeah, I've been really impressed with him the last week and a half. And the other guy, besides Spencer Dinwiddie, who I've been really impressed with this last week and a half, is Chris Chioza, who has been unbelievable and has been kind of like a Fred VanVleet type for the Brooklyn Nets. He came out of nowhere. Nets fans had a similar thing last year for a brief stretch with Shabazz Napier, where Napier played really well, getting extended minutes after not really playing at all. And then it kind of became clear that he was, like, not really efficient and was turning the ball over a decent amount. So he wasn't the best fit. But I feel like with Chioza, he's just so crafty. And the biggest thing that I noticed from him is that it's very similar to, and not that he's on these guys' level talent-wise, but Steve Nash, CJ McCollum, guys who are just constantly running and patrolling. And a lot of times Chioza will drive, and he won't have a lane to go up or won't have a passing lane to kick out to, and he'll just keep dribbling all the way around under the basket back out to the three-point line. And a lot of times a result of that drive is he gets a switch and he's a big guy on him, and he can either take advantage of the big guy being tired by blowing past him and finishing or finding someone, or he has like an open three. And I feel like his shot from the outside is very consistent, 3 for 7 from three in this game. His assist numbers are great, 5 assists with no turnovers in this game. Like, he has been really, really solid as the backup point guard, essentially, for this team now, with Dinwiddie and LeVert both starting. And I wonder what kind of ramifications that'll have in the offseason. You know, once Garrett Temple comes back, I don't know how much those two will play together. Maybe it just takes a lot of the burden off Temple. Maybe TLC sees his minutes go down as a result of this, but I think Chioza needs to be playing, and who knows, maybe it even makes it more palatable if you do wind up trading either Dinwiddie or LeVert in the offseason to get more wing help. Maybe you feel like, and this is such a small sample size still, but if this kind of thing continues from Chioza, maybe you feel like, okay, he can be that Fred VanVleet kind of guy, our backup point guard, not like a sixth man, but just like a capable set of hands you can leave the offense with in the second unit, because you're going to have Kyrie and KD handling the ball for the most part. So you just kind of need a stopgap. So maybe it does make sense to move Dinwiddie or LeVert and try to upgrade those wing positions, try to limit the minutes you give to Torian Prince or Wilson Chandler, and try to sort of balance out the roster a little bit more. I don't know. We'll see going forward. So yeah, those are my general thoughts on this game. Huge win for the Nets. Their next game is tomorrow on Thursday against the Warriors, as this West Coast trip will continue. And coming up, I'm going to get into part two of those future rankings that I mentioned earlier with Gavin Shaw of Locked On Knicks. But first, let me tell you about one of the ultimate life hacks. It's hard to find the time to sit down to read and learn more. When you don't have free time, you can't read or work on personal development. There's an incredible app that solves this problem, and I highly recommend it. It's called Blinkist. Blinkist is really unique, and it works on your phone, tablet, or web browser. It takes the best key takeaways, the need-to-know information from thousands of nonfiction books, and condenses them down into just 15 minutes that you can read or listen to. Successful people like business leaders are well known for reading a lot of books. Blinkist is made for busy people like you and me who want to get the main points of a book quickly so you can start using that information right away. And with its audio feature, Blinkist makes it easy to finish a book during your commute, on your lunch break, or while you exercise. 12 million people are using Blinkist right now, and it has a massive and growing library from self-help, business, health, to history books, everything in between. Blinkist has the latest titles from bestsellers lists, as well as the classic nonfiction titles you always meant to read but never had time to, like me in high school. With Blinkist, you get unlimited access to read or listen to a massive library of condensed nonfiction books, all the books you want, and all for one low price. Right now, for a limited time, Blinkist has a special offer just for our audience. Go to Blinkist.com/NBA, try it free for 7 days, and save 25% off your new subscription. That's Blinkist, spelled B-L-I-N-K-I-S-T, Blinkist.com/NBA, to start your 7-day free trial and save 25% off of your subscription. But only when you sign up at Blinkist.com/NBA.
All right. You seem to imply in your last comment that maybe I should have had the Pacers over the Nets. And I had delineated. I had cut it off. I said, that's a tier. I don't even think those two are comparable. And my premise was the Nets, I mean, might have a 95% version of one of the 15 greatest players of all time joining their team. And that's basically what it came down to. Obviously, I mean, you can speak to this better than I do, but I still like some of the young talent on their roster. I hope they retain Joe Harris this offseason. Caris LeVert just had a 51-point game, which tends to help. My optimism, and the counter would be, like, is there any scenario where KD and Kyrie together doesn't end in a weird, bad place? But I almost wonder if the talent is just so overwhelming on the offensive side of the floor, and you can certainly make the case the Nets will have to do a better job this offseason of acquiring two-way Robert Covington-style wings as much as those guys are available versus some of the score-first guys they have now, like Dinwiddie and LeVert, to really properly build around those two. But I just think the upside of those two guys together, even with the inevitable weirdness and the idea that Kyrie at any point could just say, screw this, I'm going to become a circus carny and leave the NBA forever. I would rather have that personally than what the Pacers have, which is an amalgamation of really good talent, a great organization, a really good coach. But ultimately, I guess the upside is Oladipo getting back to 100%, but I don't see the ceiling that Nets team has.
I should clarify. I did not mean that the Pacers should be above the Nets. Definitely should be above the Pacers. I more meant like that the Pacers were lumped in that group with like Phoenix and Atlanta right below them.
Oh yeah, that's insulting.
It's like I just thought that the tier should have cut off after them as opposed to.
You're saying a one team tier.
Oh, that's no, no. I think they belong in the tier right above them.
Oh, you think? Well, I guess.
Like I think they're last in this next tier, but I think that they belong in it.
I will disagree with you, and I will disagree with me. I think after they should be in their own one. I think it's a one team tier scenario, because I think every team above, I would say, either has the capacity to legitimately compete for a title in the next years, not fake compete for a title, actually compete for a title, or are on the road to do that in 4 or 5 seasons, kind of like the Grizzlies.
Yeah, I credit to you. I think they're properly rated here.
All right. And then, all right, moving forward, we have the Nets, then the Rockets, and then maybe we get into a new territory with Oklahoma City at 13 and Memphis at 12, where those are clearly like such different scenarios. The Nets and Houston, the Nets obviously massively accelerating their timeline by acquiring Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving this offseason. Houston has been in win-now mode for 4 or 5 seasons. They're now extremely in win-now mode after giving up all their draft picks forever for Robert Covington and Russell Westbrook. And the fact that James Harden will likely never be a better player than he is right now. Maybe he was even better last season than he is this season. If you go into the stats, there's that. Honestly, they support that. So that's sort of where I'm at with those two. And then Oklahoma City has the greatest future draft pick situation of maybe any team in NBA history. I guess you can make the argument what the Celtics had with the Nets was a little better, just given that the Nets sucked and the Clippers are very, very good. But they basically have an extra pick every year for the next decade. And a lot of those years have two with the acquisition from the Rockets and a pretty good base roster to begin with. And then I had Memphis slightly ahead of them just because of the young talent that's there. But how do you parse through all of that, Marcus Barrahall?
I think the Nets and my bias is probably showing the Nets should be higher. I think Memphis should be lower. OKC Houston's kind of a toss-up for me, but I'll start with the Nets. Like you mentioned, they've got KD coming back. They've got Kyrie coming back. There's been a lot of trade rumors and discussion about what's going to happen in the offseason in terms of trading one of either Dinwiddie or LeVert, along with maybe Jared Allen and maybe a pick or two. They have their own pick this year. Or actually, they will not have it because they're going to make the playoffs probably. But they'll have Philly's pick this year, which should be around the 20th pick. So they could make some kind of package to try to get a third guy to play alongside KD and Kyrie. There's been rumors of like Aaron Gordon being that type of guy. I think Bradley Beal before his extension was probably still too good of a guy to get for those kinds of guys. But I think that they definitely want to get another guy in there to pair with or to whatever the three version of pair is with Kyrie and KD. So if they do that and those guys come back, even if KD is only like 90% of what he was, I think Kyrie should be back basically to what he was before. It's a shoulder thing that he's out with, so it's not anything hopefully that'll be long term. If those guys can all come back and can gel and they can get a third guy, like this is a team that can absolutely compete for a title next year and can be one of the top two teams in the East alongside Milwaukee, and they should be able to compete for the next couple of years with that core. So I think they definitely, just because of like how close they are, should be higher than a couple of these other teams. Houston, we talked about them a little bit earlier. I definitely like what they're doing, and I think it was the right move given the roster once they made the Chris Paul for Russell Westbrook trade. I just don't think it'll work against specifically a team like the Clippers. I think pretty much everyone else they'll have a decent shot against. But yeah, I think if they wind up playing the Clippers or even the Lakers in the second round, I think that's kind of it for them. OKC I like more than Memphis because I think they have similar amounts of young talent. I'm a big SGA guy. excuse me. But I think that they, like you mentioned, they have way more picks. So I would put them ahead. I don't think either of those teams is necessarily head and shoulders above the other in terms of talent. And I think that OKC's pick situation should push them ahead of Memphis.
Yeah, that's reasonable. I guess the reason I'm in love with Memphis, and I like Morant maybe a little bit more than SGA, even though they're the same age. And it's close. I think they're both longtime all-stars, but I just his athletic ability is just crazy, and maybe you could argue that makes his game less sustainable than SGA, but yeah, I don't, I'm a Morant believer, and just aesthetically I like him a little more. And then I think just the combination of him and Jaren Jackson Jr. is it, like, as much as I was hyping up Mitchell Robinson, like Jackson is about as good as you can get for an archetype for a modern center, a guy who can shoot threes, is simultaneously an athletic rim runner, a rim protector on the other end, is expanding other aspects of his game. Just those two together, it's almost, I mean, this is blasphemous because they're both like top 30 players all time or top 40 players all time, but it's almost the modern Stockton and Malone in terms of how you would build those guys and build that type of pairing in 2020. I think Brandon Clark is underrated. Like, I think that guy, like, maybe not a star, but could be really, really good and sort of like a maybe even a better version of a Montrezl Harrell coming off their bench. And then even someone like Dylan Brooks looks like a very good wing potentially for a long time. Like, just everything about what they're doing and how good their coaching has been this year, even though I couldn't tell you the name of their coach, Taylor something or other.
Taylor Jenkins.
Yeah, he was on the Woj podcast.
Yeah, Taylor Jenkins.
Yeah, cousin of former Eagles quarterback Malcolm Jenkins. Don't check that. But yeah, I like that combo. And Oklahoma City, you're probably right because the pick total is just crazy. My only thing with them is like, is there anyone on that team? Maybe my guy, Lou Dort, former Sun Devil, but outside of SGA, you really like is like a young dude. Like, I just think they sort of have one great piece and then a whole lot of potential. But there really is a scenario where the Clippers are consistently picking in the 20s every year. And maybe, look, like, you have extra picks. Like, the odds go up pretty dramatically. You strike gold in that spot and you get someone like a Pascal Siakam. But that's just so far from a guarantee. I almost prefer the fact that I think Memphis has two stars locked into arguably the two most important spots on the floor.
Yeah, and the Thunder picks, though, they aren't just from the Clippers. They've also got a Denver pick. They've got Miami. They've got Houston. They've got picks, like, from
that's a lot,
a bunch of different spots. And so, like, if any of those teams flames out, yeah, that'll be a great pick for the Thunder. But I think your point about the depth of young talent in Memphis is a good one. They've also got guys like Dylan Brooks. Like, there are a lot of, like, capable young players there. And for the Thunder, it's more so guys who aren't, like, old, but guys who aren't, like, young either, like Schroeder, like Gallinari, Steven Adams. Those guys, I think, will be good for the next few years for sure. But, yeah, they've kind of reached a point where they're not necessarily going to get much better than they are right now also.
Yeah, and if they get something for Chris Paul, maybe that even further changes the equation, because you could talk about a scenario where you package, like, the Knicks are interested in Chris Paul, and I don't think the Knicks would do this because I'm sure they'd consider him untouchable. But if they really wanted to, they could say, hey, you guys love Chris Paul, we'll give you Chris Paul, we'll throw in like four first round picks, just give us RJ Barrett, he can't shoot, what's the big deal? And I don't think the Knicks would do that just because of what the inevitable backlash would be. But I could see some scenario where James Dolan is like, oh, people are so obsessed with Masai Ujiri, look how many first-round picks I can get. And they just do something really dumb. last comment on the Nets. My fear with them, and you know, so I want you to respond to this, is just defensively, mm-hmm. I really don't like where they're going to be a season from now, unless they pretty dramatically restructure the roster. They just feel like sort of, as someone who is Charmin soft on a basketball court, they feel like Charmin soft across the board outside of Durant. And if Durant, and I think Durant, like, odds are he loses a little bit of the top end athletic ability we saw throughout his Oklahoma City career. And again, in Golden State, and he's maybe, he goes from like an A defender to like a-minus, B-plus defender. And I think that drop off could be significant given what they have around him. And like, Kyrie's just going to be disinterested forever, and the rest of the guys on that team. And again, I think that there's certainly a scenario where that team looks dramatically different a year from now. And maybe I'm not giving enough credit to the fact that Sean Marks has proven to be one of the 10 or so best GMs in all of basketball. But that's sort of what worries me about them. I don't think, despite having the star power, they're as good as the sum of their parts, or as good as they should be given the talent on that roster. Again, a year from now, obviously not this season.
Yeah, it's been weird watching the Nets defense this season, because there's been runs where it's like multiple games in a row where they look tremendous defensively. You've got guys like Garrett Temple off the bench who defend really well. Torian Prince, when he's engaged, can defend solidly. Caris LeVert, same thing. And Dinwiddie, too. Like, they have a lot of guys who, like, when they lock in, they play really good defense. Jared Allen in certain matchups has been really good. Same with DeAndre Jordan in certain matchups. Like, they all kind of, like, have a high ceiling defensively, but more often than not aren't reaching it. And you saw that if you watched the Nets-Hawks game recently, when they just got absolutely destroyed defensively. So definitely adding KD would help, assuming he's in decent health. Kyrie, I think, has good hands defensively and can hold his own in one-on-one matchups. He'll definitely, like, drift when he's off ball for sure. I don't think defense will be a huge concern for this team in the playoffs, just because they have guys who, like, when the moment is there, they do lock in and they do have the ability to harass guys defensively. I think that, like, game to game, it'll definitely, like, go in and out, especially, like, on the focus aspect of defense. But I kind of believe in this team long-term defensively.
All right. You swayed me a couple of ways. I think I'd move the Nets ahead of the Rockets, though. Part of that is honestly just watching that Clippers game a night ago, because I sort of thought Houston might have low-key been the best team in the NBA, and the Clippers dissuaded me of that. And OKC, Memphis, I'll mull a little bit.